Hello and welcome to another episode of The Good Stuff, a podcast for the Irish non-profit community, brought to you by The Wheel. Today we're talking about the big picture for Irish non-profits. Over a year into the COVID crisis, where does our sector stand? This time last year, we were terrified and hopeful, though perhaps not quite in equal measures. Thrust into the middle of the crisis, with fundraising collapsing around many organisations, demand for our services skyrocketed. And although this was a huge challenge and an immensely stressful time, it seemed that our work was being recognised.
Through all the pain, grief and tragedy, COVID-19 has reminded us of the value of our charities and volunteers.
That was then Taoiseach Leo Varadkar, speaking at The Wheel's annual Summit Conference in May 2020. Across the 2 days of talks, our speakers expressed many similar sentiments, that we had remembered the importance of our values as human beings, and realised the extent to which the often invisible work of non-profits provides support in society for those who need it most.
During the crisis, we deprioritised the needs of the economy for the benefit of our society and made many great, great sacrifices in the doing of this.
COVID-19 has given us an opportunity to understand in a very new way that we are society and not simply an economy.
When all other social structures crumbled because of COVID, so when the ways that we engage through social interaction, through going to work, through, you know, picking up the phone, through going for coffee, and being able to interact, when all of that crumbled, what was there was organisations like ourselves.
And government messaging aligned with our own aims, to put people at the centre of recovery. This is Kevin McCarthy, Secretary General at the Department of Rural and Community Development.
Recovery is now the key challenge, and how we support communities in ensuring communities are at the centre of the recovery, how we ensure that the lessons learned over the last number of weeks around the rich resources that are there at community level, around our collective capacity nationally and locally to get things done, to innovate, to adapt, to transform, how we engage with one another, how we engage with the most marginalised, how we reach the most marginalised, how we ensure that nobody is left behind in the ways that we have succeeded over the last number of weeks. We need to ensure that all of those principles inform the approach to recovery.
As we approach this year's summit on the 19th and 20th of May, I wanted to take the opportunity to take stock of the last 12 months for charities, community and voluntary organisations, and social enterprises. What's changed? What hasn't? And where do we go from here? In the second half of this episode, we'll be joined by Dr. Shaina Cohen, Director of TASC, an independent think tank focused on inequality, democracy and climate justice. She was an amazing panellist at last year's summit and will be joining us again this year for a panel on envisioning the post-COVID future. Before that, though, our first guest is John Gallagher, a public affairs consultant who works closely with us at The Wheel, as well as with a number of other bodies in both the charity and private sectors.
Hi, my name is John Gallagher and I work with The Wheel.
I asked John for his assessment of where our sector was a year ago.
Well, I think the concerns a year ago or a little more were the uncertain impact of COVID and what it would mean for society generally, what it would mean, I suppose, specifically for their operations. People just didn't know what to expect. If you recall, we were seeing army trucks taking bodies through Bergamo, and there was a big fear that we had a very, very serious future ahead of us. So people, I think, were very nervous, very uncertain. But as we moved through the weeks of COVID and it became clear that we were dealing with a lower level but very serious crisis, I think the mood then shifted to how each charity or community group could continue to function. Could they continue to deliver services? Would their funding be impacted? Would staff be ill? It was a lot of uncertainty. But I think there was also, at the time, the beginning of a sort of community-wide commitment to surviving this. We can beat this. And in that context, I think people were beginning, even then, even, you know, in early early summer, late spring last year to knuckle down and to be part of beating the COVID pandemic.
Did he think there was optimism about social change among it all?
Personally, I don't think there was that type of thinking then. I don't think people went that far ahead. It was, as I mentioned, I would feel more, how do we survive this, rather than how do we bring about changes? I think the issues were very uncertain. And there was a recognition that a lot of people were going to suffer. Like, jobs were being lost by the tens of thousands. And we all were becoming aware of family members or friends who were becoming ill. There was, for instance, the nursing home situation where, you know, very tragically older people were losing their lives. So I think at this time last year, we were still really focusing on how the community sector can contribute to society. And of course, at a very individual level, how does our organisation survive this pressure or challenge that's hit us?
But has that changed as the months have passed?
Yes, I think there was, as the year passed by, a growing recognition and acceptance of the value of community and community endeavour and community-based supports and activity. I think that arose out of the fact that so many parts of the economy had to be shut down because of health and safety, mainly health precautions. So in a situation where there was a lack of services or disruption of the normal services, the commitment of people at local level to do work and to look after one another, to provide services, that began to be recognised. And without it, I think it would have been impossible to develop the road out of COVID. A lot of fabric of society would have fallen apart, I think, had there been not a very wide commitment from organised charities on the one hand to volunteering and, you know, general community-based supports on the other. So I think that was gradually recognised as we moved through the year.
And are there positives to take from this experience?
I think so. I think we were on the road beforehand to a reassessment of where community organisations stood. If you recall, towards the end of the last government, we had policies announced on social enterprise and on the broad community and voluntary sector. But they were still very much on paper and had to be implemented. We've since had the policy on volunteering law launched. But the actual practical delivery of a lot of that happened under the pressure of COVID. So, for instance, a lot of the bureaucracy and a lot of the difficulties that were there for the sector in delivering services pre-COVID had to be challenged and put aside during the last 12 months. And there was a much more flexible approach taken by many agencies. We had funding delivered to the sector through the government with the Stability Fund to allow it to continue functioning. And it all worked well. The sector continued. Various contracts and service delivery was maintained effectively and efficiently. And I think the big learning out of COVID is that we can do things differently. We can do things more simply. And we can do it in a way that facilitates what drives the community sector, which is commitment to delivering to the people who most need the services with the least bureaucracy attached to it. And we have lost a bit of that. We do need regulation and we need all types of controls and governance and transparency. But we also need to remember that the only reason that community organisations exist is to deliver services, not to be bureaucratic reporters of how money was spent. We have to remember when COVID is over that the big definition of success is, at the end of the day, looking after the vulnerable and those who need supports and can't find it themselves.
And finally, what are the big challenges that lie ahead for the non-profit sector and how do we tackle them?
I think that the biggest problem probably arises from the fact that we all want to return to normal. We all want to get back to the pub and we all want to get back to summer concerts or Vicar Street or to the All-Ireland finals or to whatever we're into. But the risk in that return to normality is that we also return to what might have been some of the bad habits that existed previously or bad processes. And we end up that we are excessively regulatory, that the bureaucratic stifling of activity at community sector that was there, some of it I fully understand as being necessary, but some of it can just become layers that are unnecessary. I think we have to have a careful examination of how we return to normal and ensure that we take the good from the COVID. You know, every crisis produces some new learnings. And COVID, I think the big thing was that we can do things differently, very differently, as we had to during COVID. And therefore, let's learn from what was good in that, and let's not return to anything that stifles community initiative. I think to enable this type of community initiative to continue, one process we do need to do is ensure that various contacts and discussions and overlapping relationships between the sector, government and state agencies, that they are somehow brought into a formal structure so that we can all operate understanding the pressures that exist on everybody. And out of that, then find a new way forward for working, which will involve cooperation and all sides recognizing that there are issues that we need to resolve in order to keep delivery of services at their best.
So that was John's perspective on the last year and the way forward. I also spoke to Shana, who, as I mentioned, heads up the Task think tank based in Dublin. We talked a little more broadly about the pressing issues for society as well as nonprofits. But first, I also asked her, what was the mood like this time last year?
Last year, I think there was quite a lot of anxiety about survival because people knew that donations were going to go down, contracts were going to be cancelled or postponed. And I think there was quite a lot of anxiety amongst organizations about what they would look like at this point, or even if they would be around. At the same time, demand because of the economic issues was increasing. So I think that there was a sense of like, we're needed more than ever, but we don't know if we'll be able to meet that demand at all or just an extent of it. I think that's been building because of the length of the pandemic and the depth of the economic problems, especially because they've hit groups that we're already struggling, like low paid workers or migrants or young people. And I think that that's why Varadkar said that we need to rethink. And I think, to be fair to him, he is rethinking. He's thinking about the living wage, but that's can't substitute for society. And I think that's where nonprofits are at, is what kind of society do we want to be going forward?
Does she see hope for permanent change out of the crisis?
I think there is a bit of hope. I wouldn't say that it's overwhelming. I think there's still a lot of anxiety that Ireland will go back to saying we have too many economic problems and we have a big national deficit, so we need to return to some form of austerity. Our corporate tax rate is being challenged, so we need to prioritize business first. I think there's still anxiety about that, but there's also, I think, some hope that the social problems, the issues are so profound that the government does not have a choice. I also think for sheer survival, the government will attempt to address some of these issues because if they don't, then they're not going to stay in power. I'm using the word social problem very loosely. I'd say that the fact that young people have been hit the hardest, and now you have multiple generations of young people who've been hit hard. You have people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s who've had to adapt considerably because of a financial crisis. They're not in the housing market. They may still be reliant financially on their parents. They're not at the place in their careers they would have liked to have been. That is a good chunk of the population, and the government's going to have to face how to help them, whether it's through housing policy, a better health policy, access to health services. It's not just retraining, it's jobs that promise opportunity in the future. And it can't just rely upon the foreign companies to do that.
And that's a big factor in fueling change?
Absolutely. Yeah, because those are people who vote.
What does she think we've learned as a sector from the crisis? And are there still lessons to be learned?
I think that we've learned, and I'm saying this without sort of extensive knowledge across the sector, but I think we've learned that there's a lot of interconnection between what nonprofits do and that we work better together. I think that it's collaboration is really key to moving forward. Better advocacy for the sector, better representation to society. I saw a recent Ipsos Mori, I think, poll, which showed that a lack of trust in CEOs of charities. So there needs to be a better presentation of the sector to the public and better collaboration in terms of advocacy to policymakers, but also in terms of addressing social problems. They're not operating on their own. Working in silos is not effective. And I think there is a growing awareness that we need to work together to address problems and not think of ourselves as just addressing one specific issue. I can say from task perspective that we collaborate with charities like we have not before. Over the past year, we've established partnerships with two local development partnerships. We're working with Safe Ireland. And then we are constantly sort of in contact with other organizations, not just like MABS, in a way that I feel like we are more embedded because people are in these charities interested in how to address a problem, not returning to sort of the short-term fix, but sort of how can we really address what's going on and think of a more sustainable long-term solution, but also a more holistic way of addressing something. Like, we have a financial resilience training program, and that is not just how do you address the immediate debt that you're in or how to pay the bills, but also longer term, how can you manage your finances better and feel more confident about this issue? The problems are really profound, and you want to keep throwing this value for money kind of stuff at us. We have to bid for contracts. We constantly have to chase money. We need a different arrangement. We need more long-term funding, and we need to be able to work collaboratively with the government instead of just being expected to deliver a policy program.
COVID highlighted the stark inequalities at play in our society. Has this awareness lasted, and will it translate into real policy change?
I think the COVID fatigue, the lockdown, is wearing away at that a bit. I think people are a bit tired. I don't think, though, that framework of people helping each other, it may not be as prominent once we get through this period, but I think it's there. I think it laid a foundation, and I don't think that will go away. I think we're moving a bit into the unknown as well, because we don't know what problems climate change is going to instigate. I mean, we could just be dealing with rolling crises, and we don't know what the economy is going to look like a year from now or 2 years from now. But I think that there will be growing impatience for the government to have a constructive impact. I don't think that austerity, which is basically postponing dealing with social problems or aggravating social problems in the name of economic growth, I don't think it's going to work. I don't think there'll be the patience for that.
How can we capitalize on what we've learned in the last year and use it to build something better?
I'd say there are three things. I think that all of it has to occur. All three things have to occur within partnerships. The first is to pressure the government to restructure the funding streams so there's more sustainable funding, that you're not constantly chasing short-term projects or even three-year projects. I think this is a long-standing issue with nonprofits all over the world. The funding has to be 5 years plus. I think there needs to be more collaboration across charities to think about how social problems are multidimensional and require a combination of services together. So that means adjusting targets. They can't just be related to one specific issue. They need to be holistic in terms of a family or an individual or a group. And the third, and maybe I'm just tooting task's horn, but there needs to be more action research on the ground to understand not just the impact or, you know, short-term fixes, but again, to understand what the causes are and the consequences are of something that's like poor health or poor mental health or joblessness. I think that there needs to be a lot more exploration of research issues and collaboration with charities so we can devise better services. The clock is ticking. Like I said, there are multiple generations now dealing with austerity and financial crisis and no chance of getting on the housing market, and job opportunities aren't as good as they should be. There's poor access to public health. Those problems, they're ticking. The clock is ticking. And I don't think the government policymakers have the scope to just push it down the road. I don't think that's possible. But, and they're going to have other issues to deal with, like climate change. So they can't, I think facing those issues now is, and they should do it collaboratively, because that's the only way it'll really be successful. So they shouldn't look at civil society as just a secondary kind of contractor. They should look at civil society as an active partner and business, and bring all three partners together. I think it would be great to see more young people engage in politics and policy debates, just as from the perspective of a think tank, and to see more minority groups represented in these debates. If not, I think that's another side of it, is that sometimes social problems are not confronted. They don't have the investment they need because those groups don't speak up enough for themselves.
How might we go about putting this into action?
Well, citizens' assemblies is one, because it puts national attention. Like if they had a citizens' assembly on young people, the future for younger generations, or, you know, Ireland as a diverse society, but also encouraging public forums. If the government actively tried to encourage the setting up of local forums where young people could be represented or minorities could be represented, encouraging minorities within their own political parties to run for office or to join political parties. Same thing with young people. And I think a big factor is education, encouraging like university education and encouraging entrepreneurships, making opportunities for university education more available so that there's social mobility.
That's all we have time for today, but please join us on the 19th and 20th of May to continue the conversation. We have 2 days of incredible events, fantastic speakers, and inspiring discussions. You can register for free at wheel.ie/events. Just look for Summit 2021. And if you're listening back to this after the fact, you'll find a full recording of all of the events on our YouTube channel. Just look for The Wheel Ireland. As always, thanks for listening, and see you next time.